Welcome to the weekly edition of Beyond the Title, where we get to know the person behind the strategy, the story, and yes, the brand. Joining us every week are senior professionals across the globe. So amazing that we just have to know who they are.
Good morning, or good afternoon, or good evening, depending on where you are in the world. Welcome to Beyond the Title. This is one of Insider's favourite things that we've got going on at the moment. We take wonderful people that we know from within the industry that are doing amazing work, fantastic, smashing their careers, generally being brilliant people, and we're not going to ask them about their careers at all because that would be far too simple. What we really want to do is we want to know who they are as people. So we're digging in, asking them a few silly questions, a few thought-provoking questions, and just trying to find out who they are and what makes them tick. Today, I am very lucky to have Jackie Barnett, the CRM manager for M&M Direct. And I'm going to interrogate her, and hopefully we're going to have a really good time. Hi, Jackie.
Hi, Kate. How are you?
Very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. Good.
So welcome to Beyond the Title. It's really exciting to have you here. Just another bit of background about Jackie. She led an amazing panel at Uplift Virtual Summit just a few weeks ago, and it was really one of my highlights of the summit. Thanks so much for speaking, Jackie.
No problem. No, it was great. It was great to be a part of. It was a really great summit. I really enjoyed it. There were some really some brilliant speakers and some great sort of insight that sort of came from it. So it was great.
Amazing. So now I'm going to ask you about you rather than about retention.
Well, I don't know what. Do you know what? There are some of the questions that I just thought, well, I know that I'm going to be answered a few. And I was thinking, talking about yourself is like really weird and awkward.
I know, but that's why we want to push people to do it, because especially it varies in different cultures, but we're both British, and that kind of self-promotion is something that we get a bit awkward about.
You do a bit of self-analysis and you're like, oh, I don't know if I like this.
I'm sure that's not true. Well, everyone else is going to love you. So first question. What is your ikigai? And for the uninitiated, ikigai is a Japanese phrase which means your reason to jump out of bed in the morning, or your reason for being.
So you know what? It's quite funny, because when I looked at the meaning of that, I just thought, why don't I jump out of bed? And then I thought, it's not only that, it's not because I'm dragged out of bed by one of my children. I have a two-year-old and a five-year-old, and it is very rare that I am jumping out of bed before they are getting me out of bed. So I guess I think, though, to be honest, they are one of the reasons why I get out of bed every day. They're like, you know, I have a great family, and it's all very busy in this household, and I suppose getting up and getting them sorted every day, and they're just generally great kids. Like, I'm really lucky, and I suppose, you know, my work as well. Like, I have some, you know, I think the last maybe 4 or 5 months, I think, have highlighted for me and probably loads of people out there the importance of the things that you have in your life. And I think everyone should, well, hopefully have a renewed sort of appreciation for, you know, the things that they have got in their lives. You know, they might have lost jobs and stuff like that. And I think hopefully that there's that focus on the good things that are going on in life at the moment. And I think for me, especially at the moment, it's sort of just being so grateful that, you know, I have a roof over my head and wonderful husband, kids, great job. And I think that sort of at the moment is what's getting me up each day. There have been some tough days, like every single person out there, you know, regardless of, you know, what circumstance or situation you're in, it's been tough. Like, and there have been days where I've thought, nah, do you know, I'd rather stay in bed. I'd rather just chill in my PJs. But, you know, if you could look for any silver lining recently, I think it has been the fact that, you know, I felt lucky that I've, you know, got up and had the kids and my family around me, and sort of weird situation of going to work, which is walking into my office and like sitting on my laptop. But it's been great as well, you know, having that extra time at home. Like I don't have to commute or anything at the moment so much. And so, yeah, I suppose that's probably the key thing for me that's been getting me up every day. Just, you know, the fact that I'm just really lucky to sort of have the things I have.
It's so brilliant. I think especially with your two little ones, it's so easy to get wrapped up in yourself. You know, and in this day and age, I think it's a bit of a problem. So having those other lives, those people that do depend on you, those really tiny, really cute people that depend on you, whether that's whether that's for mum, look at this, or mum, I'm hungry.
Yeah, I think sometimes it's very, very easy to get wrapped up in work. Work is, we're always busy. Everyone's busy, busy, busy. It's, you know, I think us as human beings, we get so sucked into, you know, the daily grind of going to work and, you know, working long days and stuff. And I feel like if there's something that's come out this lockdown, it's sort of, you know, we've had so much more time at home and as a family and sharing sort of more time together as a family. It's sort of made a huge difference, I think. And it's definitely something that me and my husband have said, like, it's, we want to continue this regardless to what things are going to look like next year or whatever. I think, you know, and it's been tricky because you're working from home. You don't have that drive in between to sort of separate work from home. So it's been a learning curve, but yeah, no, it's been great, really, from that point of view.
That's brilliant. I'm really glad to hear that. Now, which movie character best represents you and why?
I had a long hard think about this because, you know, I was thinking what sort of character should I go for? And I was thinking, you've got all the obvious ones. Obviously, we watched a lot of Disney in this house. I was like, should I go for a Disney princess? And I was a bit like, no. And then I thought of a film which I saw. It's a relatively old film. I don't know if you've seen it. It's a Julia Roberts film, and it's called Erin Brockovich.
Yes. It's based on a true story, isn't it?
It is. And you know what? I love the story. I love Julia Roberts anyway, and I love the actress. I just love the whole thing about, I think the whole moral of the film itself, and, you know, is just, it really hits home for me. You know, the fact that you can literally be anyone. It doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter what qualifications you've got. It doesn't matter. You can literally do anything if you work hard. And you sort of have that tenacity to sort of get, you know, if you believe in something, you can do it, you can achieve it. And I love that so much. And I think it's something that, you know, was instilled in me by sort of my parents, my dad. And I think it's something that I instill in my children as well. And I think I think that unassuming, you know, don't write someone off just because, you know, they aren't the ideal, you know, in your eyes, from like, haven't got the right degree or haven't got, you know, the right qualifications. These days, it's so much more than that. Like, I always say, you know, to my brothers and that, and I've got younger brothers who are sort of looking at what they're going to do next with uni and stuff like that. And I've got two brothers, they're two very, very different characters. One's very, very academic. The other sort of is more, he's got the great character. He's more driven as a person with his sports and stuff like that. And I say to both of them, like, you know, going to university, amazing. It's this, you know, it can open up so many doors, but it's not the be all and end all either. And there are so many ways to make your way in this world. If you've got the right attitude, you know, I think then, you know, that's how you're going to succeed in life. And I think, you know, I didn't go to uni, and I just think, you know, it's not everything. I think you just have to have the right attitude. And I think companies are coming around to that now. Like, you know, because I think before it's quite difficult to get your foot in the door if you didn't have a degree or something like that.
Yeah.
And I think now a lot of businesses are sort of far more savvy and sort of thinking more about, when they're interviewing someone, what the person's actually like, because, you know, you can train anything to anyone, but you can't train
drive.
No, you can't. You absolutely can't. You really can't. Someone has to want something. And I think, you know, that's, so that's, I've gone off on a total tangent, but that is why I love the film, because she's like a, you know, she's a single mum, unemployed. She trains up to be a legal assistant, and then, you know, she takes on this huge business and then sort of brings them down. And I think it's just great. It's a great story. And if you haven't seen it, you should go watch it.
I second that. I also so agree with you about the university thing. I think, well, I think without getting too boring about British politics, it was mid of the 90s, wasn't it, where there was a real push for everyone to go to university. But would the world would be, well, the world was so boring. The world will never be this boring because you can't, like, not everyone's the same and you can't put everyone in the same box. And I do hope that we are pulling away from that so that people can be individuals and strive and just find different ways to make it in the world, because it'd be boring if we were all the same. We're not all the same. All need the same things. We're not going to achieve the same things.
That's it, I think. You know, there's, you know, and I think as well, there's enough pressure in the world for kids and teens these days as well. Totally. And I feel like, you know, those pressures of, you know, feeling that they should, they're a failure if they don't go to university or anything, you know. And I just think, you know, I feel like sometimes it could knock so much confidence out of so many young people, you know, if they're passionate about something, they should just go for it. And I just, it's something for me that I think is so important, as, you know, when you're growing up, to sort of understand that you know, if you put your mind to it, you will sort of make it in what you want to do. You just, you know, it might take you a little bit longer maybe to, you know, to get there, but you'll get there anyway. So, yeah. Yes, that's my, I'll get off my soapbox now.
But. It's brilliant. Thank you. So while you've been working from home, what has been the app that you can't live without?
So I'm not a massive technophobe. I'm really not. And I was like, I'm not going to say something like Instagram, Facebook, TikTok or anything like that.
You're not going to do the dances.
Oh God, I still got a really funny story about it. I'm not going to tell it. My husband will kill me. But like,
I'll ask you off camera.
I think, yeah. I think, to be honest, the one app that I've been using lots recently is Gusto, right? Me and my husband, we're both working from home. We've been juggling the kids, you know. There were points during lockdown when obviously, you know, my daughter wasn't in school, my son wasn't in nursery. We were like, what? It was mad. We were both trying to work, homeschool, look after, you know, two-year-old,
do three different jobs at the same time,
basically, you know, just, you know, loads of stuff going on. Throwing food into the mix and what we're going to eat as well was actually, like, you know, it's like there's only so long we can survive off beige food of chicken nuggets and chips. No, in all seriousness, I love the app because it is so easy to, it's so convenient. The app's really easy to use. I select my meals, great. It's then ordered, it's then delivered the next week. Great, I don't have to make as many supermarket trips or anything like that, which is also great because, you know,
especially from a safety point of view.
Exactly. And you know what, the quality of the food is really, really good. We're also quite creatures of habits in this. Me and my husband, we're terrible. You know, like you get into like a rota of food that you're going to have.
Stir fry.
Yeah, you know, there are staples, you know, it's almost like what you've been eating sort of as a kid, and you just roll over cottage pie. And so, but what's been great is we've been trying like new foods every single week, which is great because my husband is terrible. If I was to be like, we're going to have, I don't know, like a fish curry, he'd be like, nope. But actually, like, we've been trying loads of stuff. He's like, this is actually really good.
And surprise, I think, surprise.
Yeah, exactly.
There's a whole world out there of delicious food that's now, like, on your doorstep.
Loads of different foods, loads of different cuisines. You wouldn't believe it. World outside of curry. But I think what I love most about Gusto is sort of what they're trying to achieve. So, you know, it's all about limiting the amount of food waste. I think like we as human being, we go to the supermarket and we're like, there are some people who are incredibly organized, but I am not organized from that point of view. And I'll go to a supermarket and I'll be like, I'll throw that in. And then I come home and then by the end of the week there's loads of stuff that's gone out of day or sort of I've had the veg that's gone to waste, and sort of it then gets all chucked away at the end of the week, and that's bad. I was part of the problem. I think I was reading up, and there's 15 million tons in the UK alone of food waste.
I can't even fathom that quantity.
Bread, milk, so poor. It's just like it awful. And you know, the business is trying to basically reduce the amount of food waste and become, you know, and they with all the food that they put into their boxes, it's all sort of sustainably sourced. So they're trying to keep to UK to sort of reduce sort of that impact on the environment, which I love. And I just like the whole ethos, like everything comes in recyclable packaging, you know, bar a few bits and pieces, which sort of they're working on. But I just love it. I just feel like as a sort of a service, you know, for me, it ticks all the boxes. It's easy, it's quick, you know, it's sort of simple to use. And then you've got everything, the reasoning behind it, it makes you feel good because you're doing something, I think.
Awesome.
You know, we all talk about it, but doing something good for the environment is, you know, where what everyone needs to be doing, I think. So yeah, it's sort of something that we've been using now for 4 or 5 months, and it's great, really good.
Brilliant. And it is still cooking too. It's not a sort of deliver ready meals to you or deliver takeaway. You can see the ingredients, you know exactly what's going into, you know exactly what foods you're feeding your children and feeding your whole family, and you still get to be engaged with the food, but just with all the convenience of a delivery service.
Yeah, that's it. It's and I at the end of the week, it's so good to not have to be sort of chucking stuff away or anything like that. As a family, we're using what we've got, which is and I think, you know, something that we've all probably all had to do during lockdown anyway, we've all had to be pretty inventive when the heights of lockdown. Oh, yeah. What can I make out of spaghetti, lentils,
you can eat.
Yeah, prunes that have been in a can for like 2 years in the back of the cupboard. But yeah, so that's kind of what I've been using. It's been my saving grace really for the last sort of 4 or 5 months now.
Brilliant. Now it's a quite a deep one. What advice would you give to your 21-year-old self?
What advice would I give? Have more confidence, I think, for me. You know, I think when you're young, you know, that you don't know, you know a little bit about yourself, but I think it's a real journey. You know, there's a lot going on in the world, a lot of, you know, and I think what I would say to myself is have more confidence in yourself. Like, don't worry about getting something wrong. Don't, you know, it's okay to make mistakes. It's okay to fail because you just learn from them. You know, throw your hat in the ring more, but just, you know, put yourself out there. I think that's what I'd say. You know, try not to be everyone's friend as well. Like, I think try not to be a people pleaser too often, because
really good advice.
I think people, especially in the working environment, when you try to be a people pleaser all the time, you know, you can't be liked by everyone. It's just, you know, there are going to be people, unfortunately, out there who don't like you. That's just the way it is. You just have to get on with it, you know, and that's okay. Like,
and
you
that's
know,
their problem, not your problem. You can still carry on being.
And, you know, and I think it's not don't get too hung up on that. And I think, you know, the pressure, you know, all of it. I think to myself, I say all the time to my husband, like, oh, my daughter growing up, and you know, when I was sort of a little bit young, you know, social wasn't a massive thing when I was a teenager. I was growing up, it was there, but it was, you know, it was like MySpace.
I remember those. with your top 8 friends being the most important thing, and you could drop one and replace one. It was a cutthroat world, but nothing compared to the cutthroat.
Selfie, it was all like, yeah, that's it.
So the
bang, yeah, that one. That's it. That. It was all about that. There wasn't all of those additional pressures that they, you know, kids, they come, you know, they go in school and there's, you know what it's like in school, like, you know, you get bullies and you get all this, that and the other, and they go home and then they see more of it at home and it's hard. But I think, yeah, to my 21-year-old self, I'd just tell myself to just be confident in who you are and don't worry so much about what people think of you, and sort of just put yourself out there and sort of, yeah, I think that would be sort of the key advice that I would sort of give, and we'll give to my daughter and my son as well. So
I was going to say, I think that's good advice for an awful lot of people, and not just when they're young. I think that's advice to live by. Yeah,
like, you know, I think, yeah, that's it. I think if more people live like that, it would be a better place.
Agreed. Jackie, what's the harshest feedback you've ever received?
Harshest feedback? Oh, that is an interesting one. Not knowing when to shut up. Do you know, it's quite funny. So I met my husband through work. I used to go to events, and I suppose, I'm not sure if you've got the vibe, but I'm quite a loud person.
I thought you were quite shy and retiring, personally.
My husband, I remember him being like, do you know what, you are, I talk to him at work like you do all the time with sort of, you know, your husband, your partner, or whatever, close friends, about situations that I'm in at work and how I'm going to handle a situation. My husband would be like, I think sometimes you just need to maybe not talk so much. Keep it to yourself. You're quite loud. You're quite dominating in a conversation sometimes. And I'm like, oh, right. Okay. So I think as far as advice go, like, it's not harsh. I get it. Like, I am very loud and noisy, but it's something that I do try really hard. Like, there are sometimes I just need to recognize, you know, feel the room, like, just, you know, pick up on the vibes of the room.
Sure.
Perhaps, you know, not be so loud, and, you know, but
classroom. Keep at it.
Okay, so far, I mean, there's me like, don't worry about who doesn't like you. There's a reason, Jackie, where don't like you. Because you're mouthy. I mean, I actually have a nickname of Mouth from the South because I'm originally from Essex. So, yeah. Like, I wonder where they get that from.
That's a lovely name.
Oh dear, so I suppose if I was going to pull up on, yeah, any, the harshest, I suppose it could be a lot worse, I guess, you know? But
you're not spiteful, you're not mean, you're just loud. That's fine.
Just really mouthy. Oh dear, not that it's like I'm trying to live up to like the Essex persona, the, you know, stereotype, mouthy blonde Essex girl.
Mind you, you know, for any viewers currently not from the UK, it's such a small island, but there are such distinct and often quite harsh stereotypes about every little, like 20 miles. It's crazy how we can be a very harsh nation to our neighbours, and our neighbours within the UK. We're not even talking outside of this island.
And do you know what I find as well? Like, you know, it's funny because, for such a small island as well, the different accents and stuff like that we have is so varied. It's madness. Like,
it really is. Especially like if you go to the northwest, say Manchester versus Liverpool, in, you know, and there's just basically an IKEA in between them.
It's insane. It's absolute craziness. I think, yeah. Like, I was saying, me and my husband were joking. My husband's from Birmingham. So the Midlands, and then there's obviously me from the South and Essex, and the two worst, apparently, accents that there are in ranking, Essex is number one and Brummy is number two. So I was like, oh, our kids are gonna
well, I have to congratulate Essex there, because they've risen in the rankings, because for a long time Birmingham was the most unpopular accent, so you've usurped Birmingham from the top spot.
There we go.
So yeah, it's the accolade you never wanted.
There you go. Oh dear.
Great. Be loud and be authentic in your own accent. Yeah, someone that's completely lost their Mancunian accent, so I'll get stick to my mum for saying that.
Oh really? You are Oh gosh, you're Mancunian. Blimey.
Yeah, hide it very well, don't I?
Yeah. A few drinks, maybe not so much.
You got me dead on there.
Yeah. Oh dear.
Jackie, what's the biggest leadership challenge you're faced with today?
Oh, do you know what? I think it's probably time and sort of juggling act at the moment. And even more so with us now, like, you know, a lot of us working remotely. It's, you know, I think there are three things that sort of I can think of. I think, like, giving the business what they need and want from me as a leader, mm-hmm. is one thing. then supporting my team and being a strong leader for my team, giving them the tools that they need as a team to then, you know, deliver and do the best that they can, you know, in their jobs. And then it is this whole remotely how you keep that rapport and that relationship strong, not just between me and my colleagues, but also with the the wider team as well. And I think as a leader, it's a huge juggling act. Like, and then you've got to throw on for me, like, you know, I'm just as much as a leader for my kids as I am for my work colleagues. So it's sort of a real massive juggling act of sort of making sure that I'm devoting enough time, you know, of my working day to sort of doing things strategically that I need to for the business, but then also working within my individual team members to make sure that they're getting, you know, the knowledge and the support that they need. Because I'm a real believer in, you know, knowledge share and making sure that my team have everything at their fingertips and that they are the mini leaders of my team. I think it's, you know, they all have skill sets and they all have, they're all good at things. I'll have elements that they are good at that I'm not so good at. And that's why they're in my team, because they add to what I don't have. So, you know, trying to make sure that we bring that out and I'm giving them that everything they need to sort of really sort of, you know, do the best that they can do and develop as in their career as well. And it's tough, you know, like it's, you know, days are short, meetings are long. You know, that it's, I think, you know, that's only heightened, you know, over the last 4 or 5 months as I'm trying to, you know, because now, you know, before I was going from meeting to meeting, I come back and at least I come back and I come to the team and I can pick up on the vibes of the room. You know, you can pick up on the vibe of the team. You can tell if there's something not right or there's some stress or there's tension or whatever. And then now being remote, it's really tricky picking up on that over sort of a screen or an email or a message. So I think, you know, it's trying to make sure that I am being, and they see me as a good leader and they're feeling supported. I think that is sort of the hardest thing. It's the thing that's sort of been a big learning curve for me on sort of, I've had to really adapt my style of how I'm leading teams and how I'm working with my colleagues. So I think it's been tough. It's been enjoyable. Like, really, you know, obviously M&M Direct over the last 5-6 months have been incredible. We've had an incredible, you know, 4 or 5 months during the lockdown. They're a huge opportunity for us. So it's really important that I am a great leader for the team, because otherwise it could really all go wrong. So I think that's probably for me the most difficult challenging part of being a leader at the moment. But it's all about staying in contact continuously, like, you know, and I think picking up the phone, you know, using your Zooms and all of that is very, very important. But whenever possible, I do try and sort of, at the moment, you know, we are meeting sort of once every couple of weeks, because just to get face to face in, I don't want to do one-to-ones and team updates over a screen, because it's not the same as being, you know, one-to-ones for me are it's a small part of a working, you know, the working week or working month where my team have my sole focus attention is about them. And I want to be there, I want to be present, not, you know, just, you know, in a room on a screen. You know, I don't feel people open up perhaps as much. So for me, that's vital for us, is to we still try and get together as much as we can.
That's great, you're able to do that.
Restrictions and all of that. But, you know, it's tough. It's tough at the moment, I think. I don't know, what do you think? Like, you agree? Like, have you found it difficult as well? Like, what?
Totally. We've been quite fortunate, again, managing to follow guidelines but still get some FaceTime. Although my direct line manager is based in Paris, and I've never met him, and we get on really well. And but that's just the kind of the nature of our big international business. But yeah, I mean, when the government in the UK were encouraging people to go back into the offices in sort of August and September, we were able to, because there were only kind of a handful of us that were able to commute in, so we could see each other on a quite regular basis. And it's the conversations that don't warrant a phone call, or you wouldn't think warrant a phone call, but actually you can resolve something before it's ever an issue. Before, there are so many times, so I work in marketing, and so I work really closely with the inside sales team. And often they'll query a lead that's come in through marketing, and they'll be saying, oh, what's this? Why is this? And they'll ask each other. And I'm sat there on the other side of the room within earshot. And I just go, I can answer this question, but they wouldn't necessarily have thought to ask me or to reach out, or can we jump on a quick video call or send a message, and I might not see my messages straight away. But when you're there, when you're present, and when you're listening to it, it's the stuff that you pick up on. You can sort things, and you can resolve things, and you can achieve things, I think, a lot easier sometimes face to face.
Oh, I do as well. Do you know what? It's amazing how people can read, different ways people can read a sentence. It's just a sentence.
Totally.
Just maybe three words. Doesn't it? It's madness. It's like, you know, and it's, I feel like that is some, you know, when you've got a team, I've got a team, big personalities in my team, you know, we're all big personalities, different personalities. And I think, you know, there have been, our team can get very busy, very stressful. And it could take just one sentence from one person, and it could just blow up, and you just think it could have all been avoided if we were just in the office. And, you know, and I think this is why for peak season, I'm like, we need to be in the same room, because, it's some things can be quickly resolved and sort of decided. And like you say, people just listening for each other, you know, I can answer that question. And sort of, you know,
it's sorted in seconds. Also, I think we're really complex social creatures. And what you say about email, like written language is a fantastic thing, but it's also, it loses the nuance that body language and tone and intent, it's so difficult to read that. And I think that's often where something that seems really innocuous and just a normal request to someone can come across as so abrasive or rude or passive aggressive. And it's an absolute minefield, because we are such complex creatures with, you know, a whole range of emotions.
Absolutely.
Which must be a real management issue.
Yeah. I mean, the amount of times that, you know, you think to yourself, you know, they might, when I'm in the office, I'm running to and from meetings, and someone might go, can you just tell me this? And I'll go, yeah, blah, 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 right, gotta go. And then I run to the next meeting. If I was to do on a message, like, it would just look really rushed, like I've just literally been really stern and sharp with someone. It's not, it's because I'm going, oh, cancel.
You're actually out the door,
Now going into another meeting. Like, it's tough. It's tough at the moment. And I think, for a lot of teams, I'm sure a lot of people out there are sort of experiencing the same sort of things, and communication, I guess, like making sure you're getting those face-to-faces in, I suppose. Yeah, where you can maybe jump on like a video call like this, at least you can see someone's face and stuff, and you can have, you know, that open conversation wherever possible.
I use more emojis internally than like, just because it's like, I'm saying this is a nice thing. Look how smiling my face is. You can't see my face. Or I have on occasion just sent a selfie of my actual face. It's like, this is what it looks like. Anything you can do to get that personal interaction.
Oh, God. Yeah.
My next question for you. What are your hopes for your industry?
Hopes for my industry. Well, I guess that we come out the other side of this pandemic in a much stronger place. It's been tough. Been so hard. And I think, I hope that as an industry, we move forward. You know, we've all had to adapt, be very agile. And I hope that as an industry, we have sort of learned that that is key in being, as a business, businesses, teams, you know, people being agile, being able to switch things up and change things. I hope that sort of going forwards, that's sort of the, just going to be the norm now, that we are constant. I think we'll become more vigilant, like keeping our eye out for stuff like this, but trying to pick things off before they become, and trying to make the most of them, I suppose. I guess, yeah, I think there's been a lot of lessons, I think, you know, and even just in general, like, let's just hope people, businesses, things are kinder, nicer. You know, I think, yeah, on a personal note, I guess I just want to move my team forward. And, you know, there's some really exciting things, I think, to come on the horizon. I think hopefully we, you know, and all those other businesses out there can cling on, and, you know, those that are struggling are sort of make it through, take big learnings, try and take this as a chance to learn from how they, you know, need to change as a business in order to sort of be able to sort of survive something like this. May not be, you know, obviously not another pandemic, but do you know what I mean? Like, they've taken sort of learnings on how they might need to change their teams and the way they do things, that will help them sort of in future. And then for businesses like us that, you know, M&M, who have, you know, just done so well in, you know, in this situation, that we don't waste the opportunity, and that we make the very most of it. So I guess, yeah, my hopes for the industry is that I hope, you know, it's a shame really, we're losing, you know, a lot of great, you know, businesses, a lot of great retailers out there. It's such a shame. And I look at the high street, and I know it's obviously an e-commerce business, you know, we don't have those worries, and, you know, you think, oh, it's great, but it's, you know, those local businesses and stuff like that, you know, those, I hope that as many of those as possible make it through, because, you know, they are vital, I think. And I really hope that, you know, people are supporting them as well as buying great deals at low prices on M&M Direct. I also hope that they are also, where they can, shopping locally and supporting their local businesses and helping them out.
Especially because
this time when they really, really need us, and you know, they offer so much to us as a consumer, and I hope, yeah, I think that's my hopes, that people are going to be more thoughtful in this, you know, with this industry and how they shop and how they consume, and yeah, I think that's my hopes really. What about you? What do you think?
It's the recovery. I think I really do agree with you on that. I've been trying to think really carefully about where I shop.
Yeah.
And, you know, because it's like, okay, especially I'm really lucky. So I live in London, and the rest of the hospitality industry is taking such a massive hit. And obviously the 10 o'clock rule that we have, it is really impacting them as well, and especially having to shut for so long. So I'm really like, if there's a favorite restaurant or a shop or anything like that, I'm trying to spend quite conscientiously. Obviously, like, I'm not there chucking money left, right, and center.
Yeah.
But I really am like, okay, this company is amazing. I love what they stand for. The service, you know, especially if it's a restaurant, okay, the serving staff are incredible. The food's amazing. The chefs are like, just the whole thing. I generally think I want this company to stay in business. So one, I'm going to put my money there rather than, you know, a chain or something that doesn't appeal to me in the same way. And not that there's anything bad with chains, but, you know,
you're not saying that you're never going to shop at, you know, get your coffee from your preferred brand of, you know, coffee or whatever. Mm. But, you know, I think it is. It's those small changes that we're making that make a big difference, I guess. Like,
definitely. Because there is a certain element of, like, and also I try and tell my friends about them as well, is that we have such a power as a collective. Things like, so, you know, social media gets such a bad rap, and I don't know if you've watched The Social Dilemma on Netflix at the moment. But there is some power in it. So if I go somewhere and I post it and I tag it and whatever, that you know, that social power that means that someone else might go to somewhere that I think is fantastic, and I really hope does survive this really difficult year that the hospitality industry or the retail industry has been having. I'm going to shout about it because, yeah, there is power in social.
Yeah, no, there are absolutely. Like, and it is like, yeah, like we say, social does get quite a bad rap and it's not always great, but for those local businesses and those recommendations and stuff like that, yeah, I do. I think it's so important that we're shouting about those, you know, those experiences that we're having.
Yeah.
Sort of in those smaller businesses and that.
One weird fact about you, please.
This question, I thought about it for ages. It's like the hardest question, and I think this is like we as humans hate, like, when someone's like, oh, I've got to think about me and a weird fact, what is weird about me? Like, it's been ages, and then I just thought, what can I talk about? And the only weird thing I can think of is I once dressed up as a seagull for a sea-themed barn dance.
Spectacular.
That's the thing. Right, so I'm quite big anyway on fancy dress. I'm one of these people, go hard or go home. You know, don't turn up to a fancy dress party. The theme is clear. So don't cut. Like, if it's, I don't know, you get these people who try and look cool when they're fancy. That's not the point of a fancy dress party. You're meant to look ridiculous. So don't be coming with, like, I don't know, what's some of, like, heroes and or prince and princesses and just come with, like, a hat. I was like, no, you've got to go all out. Like, I've dressed up as an Oompa Loompa, orange, green hair.
I love that.
But yeah, this, I feel like the seagull, me and my friend, she actually stitched me up a little bit. She was like, do you want to come to this party? It's like sea themes, birthday, it'd be great. I was like, yeah, awesome. Listen, we went to the fancy dress shop. Honestly, we walked in, we're like, we need something. It was for the week, like the next day. We need something sea themed. She was like, ooh, mermaid? We were like, oh, no, there's a mermaid. There's going to be loads of mermaids there. What else you got? She was like, my friend went as a codfish. There was like a full blown, you know, like one of those big suits, little hole for a face, codfish. Yeah.
Incredible.
And then a big, like, fluffy seagull outfit, which I went in. We turned up, pulled up at the car park. My friend was like, oh, I forgot. It's a barn dance. And I was like,
you've got to be able to dance.
I was like, well, who has a sea themed barn dance? Who has a sea? That's the weirdest thing ever. She's in like, she can barely move. I've actually got pictures of us trying to get upstairs in the car. Like, she was squished in. And we turned up and we're pretty much the only ones that are dressed up. It was like one of those comedy moments. You only like burst through the doors and then it's like, oh. We're like this and you've got like your sexy mermaid, you're like.
Yeah.
Oh, cool dude in his like speedos with his rippling six pack, and then there's a cod and a sea fish, a seagull.
Cod and a seagull.
So yeah, I suppose.
I mean, it goes back to the big personality thing. I just think lean in, carry on, crack on. This is brilliant.
I'm quite quiet and character. Don't you know?
Incredible. Don't ever change. Always be a seagull.
Yeah. Amongst a load of mermaids, be a seagull.
Oh dear. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Never be basic, never be predictable, never be a mermaid.
That's it. Always push the boundaries.
Never that life lesson there.
Yeah.
I've got one final question for you.
Yeah.
What is your favourite food and your place to and your favourite place to have it?
My favourite food, I'm sorry, but I'm going to go traditional. If I had to pick one last meal to eat, it'd be a roast dinner, through and through.
Got it. What meat are we talking?
I'm talking, I think I would have to go chicken. I do like a nice roast chicken dinner. I'm a real meat and two veg kind of girl. I'm not a salad. And you know, not that there's anything wrong with that, obviously. Each to their own. But I'm very much, I like, you know, proper roast potatoes, Yorkshire puddings, thick gravy. Like, I love veg as well. I'm a big veg fan, so like I love broccoli, my favorite vegetable. Where would I have it? It would be at home with my family, honestly.
Would you be cooking or would your husband be cooking?
I am the cook. My husband can cook. We are, you know, he's a good cook, but anything like that. Like, I'm generally sort of the cook, and I really enjoy it. I love cooking. I really, when I've got the time as well to properly sort of put some time aside, like Christmas this year, I cannot wait. I'm so excited. Like, I love doing, and I, you know, fingers crossed we can have some of the family over. I love that. I love entertaining. But yeah, that's it. I, you know, keep it simple. Me, traditional, nice roast dinner with the family. Perfect. That would be my ideal. What about you?
I know it's such a classic English answer, but it would probably be curry. There's a very specific three curries in a very specific place. So since I was 18, my family have gone to the same Pakistani restaurant for most family celebrations, since before my 18th birthday.
This must be a thing, because I have an Indian every Friday night. Me and my family would go to this one Indian restaurant for an Indian.
It's a for any non-Brits watching. Yeah, it's the way that we've taken Indian cuisine, ruined it a little bit, trashed it, ruined it, just made it exactly what they want. This is not traditional English food. This is not traditional Pakistani food. This is the food that Indian and Pakistani people make for English people. I'm sorry. But this particular place, and it's fantastic. We've been going there. We don't go there every week. So it's right in the middle of Manchester. Place called Akbar's. And but we've been there, yeah, since I was 18. Went there for my 18th birthday, for my dad's 60th birthday, for my sister's 21st birthday, all of those. And we've got a system now. So me, my sister, and my sister's boyfriend. This is all basic. My sister's boyfriend will eat anything we tell him to, as long as he gets the naan bread, the single naan, not the family naan, comes on a hook and is, I'm going to lose my laptop, is like, it's bigger than the screen. I can't, it's this big. And it comes on a hook. The family naan comes on two hooks, which is great. So Jamie's just excited about quantity. Mum and dad get the things that they normally get. And then my sister and I force her boyfriend to order the seafood balti, the lamb karahi, don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, and the garlic chili chicken. And that is what we want. And we'll have, each of us like one slightly more than the other. So we each get a bit more of our favorite. And we want naan, and we want rice, and we're at bars. And the staff are incredible. There seems to be so many staff that move so quickly. I presume there's a one-way system around the thing. It's fantastic. I love that.
Amazing.
At bars on Liverpool Street.
Yeah, I do love, because I think I've got a feeling. I think is there an Akbar's in Birmingham as well?
Is there?
Yeah,
and there's one in Rotherham and one in Newcastle as well.
Yeah, so I've been to the Akbar's in Birmingham, and it is great. But like, we've got a curry house in down south, and literally, I'm not joking. It would be. I used to be a girl guide, and I used to go to girl guides on Friday night with my friend, and then we used to walk guides to this Indian restaurant on Friday night to meet my dad. And his wife, my stepmom. And we used to have Friday dinner there, literally, even now. Like, and it's so funny, like, we go there and sort of there are like, he always says, oh, he's meeting the new generation, because literally, like, it was me and then my dad would take my brothers and me there, and then it would be my brothers and then my children, and the same owner has been there for like this whole time. We're just like little regulars. I love it. Yeah. Oh dear. Yeah.
I think this might be the record for the longest and waffliest beyond the title, because I've just chatted rubbish at you, and you've been amazing. Thank you for all your answers. They've been really thoughtful. I'm really open. Thank you so much for taking part in Beyond the Title, Jackie.
Thank you for having me. Yeah, thank you. I'm sorry I've waffled on
for
so long.
No. I'm the waffler. You've been brilliant. But it's been fantastic. I've really loved talking to you.
Okay, you too.
So thank you, Jackie. That was Jackie Barnett, the CRM manager for Beyond the Title. And we'll be back same time next week. Thank you very much. Goodbye.